Okay, let's go ahead and start up. And there's some beginning concepts that I want to go through. And what we want to do is finally get to an area that we can talk about, custom claims-based security. But before we get there, there's some things I want to build your understanding of.
Okay.
How many people here would say that they have a pretty good understanding of the user information list inside of SharePoint? Once again, the user information list? Okay. Well, that's just a basic thing that if you don't understand how that thing works, you're not going to be able to understand, you know, how SharePoint security works. The user information list is a per site collection profile. So we're going to start by looking at that. We're going to look at securable objects. We're going to look at elevation of privileges. And these are all things where, you know, if this was a SharePoint 2007 lecture, these topics wouldn't change very much. But it's important to understand all these before we start kind of building your understanding, you know, of claims on top of that. And then we're going to talk about identity in the abstract and kind of talk about the motivation for claims-based security. We'll talk about the implementation of claims-based security inside of SharePoint. Then we'll finish off talking about creating a custom claims provider. Okay, now, if this was your first security lecture ever, and I know it's not, you know, we'd have to belabor the difference between authentication and authorization. So we know at a high level that authentication is the system asking you, who are you? You giving it some credentials, and it going through some kind of check and says, okay, you know, you're really Scott, or you're really Ted, you're really Bob. Now, after authentication is done, we get some kind of a badge to walk around the system with. You know, whether you think of it as a driver's license or you think of it as your passport, you've got something, you know, that some authority has given you that says, you know, this is Ted. And then the second part is authorization. You know, so given the fact that the system can see my badge and sees that I'm Ted, is it going to let me delete this particular file? Is it going to let me access that SharePoint site? Now, what we'll see is that the top bullet, authentication, SharePoint doesn't do authentication or identity management. It delegates that out, you know, to some other system. You know, whether it's IIS in Windows to do a Windows authentication, whether it's ASP.NET and an authentication provider, or one of these newfangled identity management systems that kind of fits into the claims-based model. You know, someone's going to do the authentication, and so what SharePoint's going to do is take the badge of that authentication and wrap a profile around it at the site collection level. So that's kind of when we'll see the user information list. But as we'll see, SharePoint does the authorization. SharePoint doesn't want anyone else doing the authorization. Now, outside of SharePoint, do we have authorization? Yeah, just in Windows. So just look at a basic Windows scenario where Bob the user is logged in. What's his badge? It's going to be a Windows security token. And so when Bob tries to delete a file, there's a security access layer in the Windows operating system that looks at that file and says, hey, there's configuration information, something called an access control list or an ACL. And so what Windows can do is simply walk down the ACL and look for entries that tell it that Bob can either write or gets access denied on this particular file. And that's basically the way that authorization works. Now, when we get to SharePoint, we'll have access control lists, but they're not done using Windows. They're not done using, you know, Windows security tokens, but it's going to be a different system. But at a high level, it's going to be the exact same concepts. Okay, now, next thing we're going to do is we're going to motivate this thing called the user information list. Now, let's go back into my VM here. And inside of my VM, here's some site collection security. I'm going to go ahead and open up this particular project right here. And while I open up this project, I'm also going to go back to this one particular site collection. And so what I wanted to do is kind of start from scratch with a site collection that's got, you know, nothing in it. So I just created a brand new site collection. Top level site is a blank site. And so what we're going to do is we're going to take a look at the user information list behind this. And we're going to see that it's going to start its life pretty bland, pretty boring. Now, inside of this application right here, well, I have a bunch of layouts pages that are in place right here. You can also see that, you know, Wingtip Server is going to be the app that I'm going to build this against. So as this guy is firing up. Looks like it's taking a second to initialize some things inside there. I wonder if all that business I did with the IP connection might have been confusing things. So let me go ahead and just kind of start one more time as it's doing the IIS reset. Okay, now let's make sure this thing starts back up. Now, the user information list, it's just a list, and it's put in the top level site of every site collection. And it's an invisible list. They're never going to show it to a user. And as I go through and do my first demo, you know, you're going to see that everybody that ever touches the site collection, you know, is going to be put inside of this user information list. Okay, this is still coming back. Why are you taking so long? Hopefully I didn't mess things up before. I'm just going to give it another second to run through. I really apologize for this machine not responding better. Yeah, I wonder if there's something I did about changing those IP addresses that's messing everything up. I'm going to give this one more second, and then if it's not, I'm going to go ahead and reboot, and I'll just kind of talk through some slides as this is rebooting. Yeah, something is definitely going on here. So let me go ahead and do a restart on this. And I'll just kind of talk through some slides while that's restarting. Okay, so the user information list. It's this list in every single site collection. Once in the top level site. And what this does is it tracks the different security principles that are using the site. So let's kind of map out the different types of security principles. Well, first of all, we have external users. You know, so you're thinking of like your Windows users as the primary example of those, but it could also be users that have logged in via forms-based authentication and have roles inside there. Also, external groups, such as Active Directory groups and ASP.NET roles, are going to be inside the user information list. And the internal SharePoint groups are going to be inside there as well. Okay, now this guy's starting back up. I was also doing some things with a user profile service. And I'm hoping that didn't mess things up too much as I was doing that. Okay, so now it's there. That's one more time. Log back in. And I'm hoping the demo gremlins have now gone away and that it won't take me all that long for this site to come up. And now I'm thinking, well, I've also got outside of my VM, just on the regular machine, I have something that's working as well. Hey, well, I'm going to do my first set of demos, possibly all my demos, on this outer machine, not on the VM. and so I have the same thing here where wingtip server. Sorry for this change, but it's going to make things run faster here. And while we're at it, I'm just going to go ahead and totally get rid of that as well. Okay, and now I'm just going to go ahead and build it from inside here. So I'm going to take the exact same example. I apologize for having this take so long to get started up. Okay, so now, if I go down to this first piece of code with the user information list, just an application page that I have, and so in this code right here, we're going to go to, you know, NESP web object that's a top-level site, go to its list collection, and just retrieve user information list. And now I'm going to go through there and pull out things like the ID, the content type, the title, the name. Okay, now let's go over to this code sample that I have right here. And I'm going to take this, and we're going to go ahead and deploy it. And as we just start deploying this, it's going to push the application pages and some menu items inside of the site. And give me one more second as I go up to my apologies for such a rocky start here. Okay, so maybe if I don't use that name, just use. Okay, believe it or not, we will get there. Give me one more second, and what we're going to do is... delete this top-level site collection. Shouldn't have to work so hard to get here. Okay, so test site, and we'll create this as a blank site. And now as this thing gets created, finally we're going to go back here and create this inside here. Okay, shouldn't have taken so long to get to this point, but now we're in. Okay, now I want you all to imagine we're starting the presentation again right at this very second. Okay, you're saying, yeah, sure. Anyway, let's go back here. Thank you. Not ending the presentation. I'd probably be happy after getting rid of all those. Okay, here's what we wanted to get to. We're 16 minutes late getting here. Okay, so this little application right here shows us this thing which is called the user information list. And so what we see inside the user information list is there's just basically a entry, an item, for everything that we have inside of, you know, for every user, every external group, every internal group. Now, if we go down to manage, now, one of the things, as I switch my machine, I'm now on a machine that's not inside a domain. But, you know, imagine we come down here and we've, you know, got some user. and you know our user's name is Bob, and we go ahead and you know we decide we want to add that user to our particular site. So we go down to site permissions, and inside of site permissions, I'm going to say grant permissions, and I'm going to go ahead and click on this dialog right here. And as I click on this dialog, this is the people picker that we're used to from 2007. Yeah. Now, there's going to be two different kinds of web apps. There's going to be classic web apps, and that's the one I'm starting with. And that's got the old people picker. When we get to the new claims-based web apps, you know, what we're going to see is that they're going to be different. So notice that the old people picker lets me go through there and you know basically find different things, test site members. Let's go ahead. What was my user's name? If I go back to full name, member of profile. Okay, well, close enough. Let's see if I went up there and added a... I might have things not checked in. But basically, as we you know, we add users inside there, you know, one of the things that I want you to see is that those users are going to go into the user information list. So if I add an external user, it goes inside here. If I add an external group, like an Active Directory group, it goes in here, and they get IDs. They get IDs of 1, 2, 3, 4. If you add a SharePoint group, that goes inside here. Now, another thing that's not that obvious is, what happens if you add in an Active Directory group, domain users, and then the user Bob hits the site and basically has an access control check and he passes it because he's in that group? He's actually added. They automatically add him on the fly inside here. Now, those IDs are important for two reasons. You know, one is access control lists. Whenever you go inside a SharePoint and you add an access control list entry, it's always pointing back to this ID of someone inside there. And so people kind of wonder, well, I had this content in my list, and I backed up the list content in a site template, and I exported it from site collection 1, and I imported it from site collection 2, and no security stuff works anymore. Well, that's because Bob happened to be number 17 in site collection 1, and there's no assurance, and it's, you know, incredibly likely that, you know, you will never have the same ID across two different site collections. You know, so once you kind of see the user information table, you know, it makes a lot more sense how things work. Okay, we also might want to think, you know, about the current user. And so some of the things that I wanted to see, you know, as I, you know, was writing this particular code here, was that we have the current user. And if I want to do programming on the current user, well, there's a lot of different ways that we could do that. You know, I could basically do it the Windows way, say Windows identity.getCurrent, and that basically takes the identity right off the current thread. And so, you know, as you do, you know, something like that, you know, you're going to see that, you know, if we're just running under the old classic mode, they use impersonation, and so the thread is impersonating the user. Now, there's also the ASP.NET way of doing things, and the ASP.NET way of doing things is to use this.page.user.identity. And so one of the things that ASP.NET and its security model knows is that the current thread of the request doesn't always run as the user. Sometimes we have a daemon process on the server and the thread runs as this. So ASP.NET says, I don't care who the thread's running as. Yeah, I basically picked up the user identity at the beginning of this request and I've cached it off someplace. And so generally in ASP.NET, that's either going to be a Windows identity or it's going to be a forms-based FBA identity inside there. Now, when we get to SharePoint and we start doing SharePoint security, and then we start saying, well, let's go ahead and say site, we get my current web object and get the current user, and then we have this SP user object. And so what's important to see here is that, you know, this thing is always going to, you know, go back to the user information table. You know, so you think of the current user, the SP user object, you know, as all the information from the underlying security token, you know, be it, you know, a Windows security token or an FBA token. And those things basically just get rolled up in the profile. And then you also have the ID and anything else that, you know, got put inside here. And we also, you know, recall that, you know, it's very site collection specific. Okay, now let's do some work where we actually create some lists. So the next thing that I'm going to do here is I'm going to pull up a second example. And this second example is going to be a different project called Site Collection Security Init. And we're going to go ahead and open that. And before I run this, I'm going to go ahead and take a look at a feature receiver that we have here. And one of the things that we're going to do is I'm going to go ahead and get rid of the code that's going to actually add users inside there. So the first thing my code is going to do is create a bunch of SharePoint security groups. So at the site collection level, it's better for us to work in terms of creating SharePoint groups, because then we can create these logical roles. You know, data entry clerk, you know, versus content manager. And then what we can do is when we start defining the access control lists, you know, on our lists, libraries, or whatever we have to do it on, we're not doing it on external security principles. We're just doing it on these internal SharePoint groups. And then the ongoing maintenance is just adding and removing external users and external groups, you know, from the SharePoint groups. You know, so to be able to do that in an automated fashion, you know, gets to be a pretty useful thing. So in this case right here, you know, what we're going to do is we're going to pre-create a couple different groups. And let me go ahead and just get rid of those users so things won't break inside there. We'll come back here. We'll take this and we'll put it over to the correct site. Okay, and then we'll go ahead and run this right here. So let's go ahead and we'll deploy that guy. And as I push this out, we'll go ahead and no activation. Okay, so what I need to do here is let's go up to Site Collection Features, and there is the security. You know, so at this point, I click, we create three different lists, plus if I go to People and Groups, and we go, you know, look at the different groups we have, you know, programmatically, you know, adding your groups, you know, gets to be a nice thing to be able to do. Now, the next thing I want to talk about is securable objects. So what we have inside of SharePoint is we have this idea that there's a bunch of different objects that can have access control lists. They're what we call securable objects. And so sites, SP web objects, lists, SP list objects, and items, SP list item objects, you know, are all classes that inherit from this securable object class. And they all have the ability to have an access control list. But by default, there's only one access control list per site collection on the top level site. And since every other securable object has a parent who has a parent who has a parent that's eventually going to get to the top level site, by default, we just have one access control list on the top level site, and all other objects use that. Now, if I go to list one right here, and I decide that we can go to list settings and click on the permissions, or now we have this little thing in the ribbon, list permissions. You can see at this point, I'm inheriting permissions from up above. I think the UI is much better at kind of indicating to users, you know, what the potential problem could be. You know, but we have this case right here where if I want to have individual security on this list that's different from the site, I'm going to basically click and say stop inheriting. And I get a copy of the access control list. And so at that point, I can change it. I can take away things. I can add things in. But what's important to see is that if I go ahead and I decide to break the inheritance, I get a copy. And now if we add a new user to have access to the top-level site, that user doesn't automatically get access here. You know, so you'd have to kind of keep things in sync. And that provides a much better motivation for trying to do, you know, all the security in terms of SharePoint groups, you know, where you're not going to have those issues of trying to add, you know, users or external groups to things down below. Well, let's go to list number two. I go to list number two, and I go to permissions. Hey, this guy already has unique permissions. So now a second thing I wanted to illustrate is, you know, after creating a SharePoint group, let's go ahead and create a list, and programmatically, let's set the access control list in place right there. And once you see the code, it's not all that difficult. So if we go back here and take a look at, let's look at the code inside, once again, the same feature receiver. So now when we've created list two, we're going to get a hold of that as a SP securable object. Okay, just as a note, securable object, SP securable object wasn't in SharePoint 2007. They had an iSecurable object interface, which you can still use, you know, but that's deprecated. So now what they did is they took the three main classes and they had them all inherit from SP securable object. And when you have a securable object and programmatically you want to change things, there are these things that we create which are called role assignments. Now, if I go back to the slides for just a second, if we kind of look at this right here, you know, the object model is going to have role assignments. It's going to have these SP users. What's confusing about an SP user is that it really should be called SP user or external group in 2007. As we'll see, the name should be even longer in 2010. But we create one of these, we create a role assignment, and there's these things that are called role definitions, which in the UI show up as permission levels. So as we look at this code right here, we get this role definition, one of the built-in ones, contribute. You know, so you can always use contribute, full access, one of the built-in ones. You can create your own permission level and add whatever permissions that you want inside there. But at the end of the day, you create a role assignment to be able to take some securable object and put an access control list entry in place. Now, down here, when you say role assignment, and here I'm putting it to a SharePoint group, what are the different things that I can pass in the constructor for role assignment? And the answer becomes very easy. You come back here. When you create a new one of those, you can basically bind it to any one of these things inside here. You know, so by the fact that you're inside the user information list means that, you know, your ID can be used as an access control list entry. You know, so as you're creating one of these particular objects right here, you know, just realize that if you can see it in the user information table, you know, it can be inside here, and, you know, we can create a permission level based on that. Now, another thing to note here, when you break inheritance through the UI, you don't have any choice. You always get a copy of the parent's access control list, and you can basically remove everything if you want manually. But when you break inheritance programmatically, you have a true or false. True would say, give me a copy, just like it, you know, would happen if I went through the UI. But false says, give me a blank access control list. And so at that point, that object can't be accessed by, you know, anyone unless they either have ownership or, you know, some type of administrative rights, you know, that let them see everything. So here we create an access control list that's blank, and then we add a couple entries in place, you know, and that's what allows us to, you know, to get to this right here where we go and look at list permissions, and we've created this access control list. Now let's go to list three. I go to list three, and I go back into permissions here, and you can see that this one, you know, list three is just inheriting the access control list from the parent. Okay, that's great. Let's go ahead and add an item inside here. So I'll add an item. And is it possible for me to go to an item and give it a unique access control list? And the answer is yeah. So let's go up here and say manage permissions, and whoa and behold, this thing's already got a unique access control list. So what I wanted to show in this example right here was that with list three, while we're not going to put individual permissions on list three, we put an event handler in place. And so every time you add a new item to a list or you add a new document to a document library, potentially there's an opportunity to run a piece of code to basically see if you need to lock it down anymore. And so this basic piece of code shows an after event. And so after the item has been added or after the document has been uploaded to the document library, can you look at that thing and kind of make any decisions? You know, maybe the clearance level is so high you want to get rid of read by contributors, something like that. So by creating this role assignment and then going to the item in question, break role inheritance, and put the definition in place, you kind of see how we can get at things inside there. Okay. Now, next thing we're going to look at is let me go ahead and put this slides up in regular screen view. Okay, so we went through, we took a look at, programming with permissions, how we move around inside there. Now, let's say that our code's not running at enough permission to do something. That gets to be a common issue in SharePoint. So the issue is a call comes in, and the call has been issued by Bob, who's a contributor in the browser, and now my web part's code starts running, but by default, I can only do what Bob can do. And so if my web part has some kind of special logging list that it logs entries into, however, if the list isn't there, it just kind of creates it on demand. But if Bob can't create a list, my web part can't create a list. So what do I do? So there's this notion of elevating permissions or elevating privilege. Now, the first thing we need to do is to run this SP security run with elevated privileges. And that starts running your code in a more privileged mode. But there's two things that actually happen. One, and this is particularly when you're running kind of the old Windows classic security model, your thread is running as the user, not running as whatever the worker process is configured to run as. So let's say we have wingtip slash Bob as the user, and then we have wingtip slash SP underscore worker process. So now my web part is running as Bob. So let's not even talk about SharePoint access. Let's just talk about data access. My web part needs to reach across the network and connect to a database. And that SQL database is configured to only allow for integrated Windows authentication. But now there's this issue where Bob authenticated from his client machine to the web server. Now we're trying to use his identity to push from the web server to the database server. And in many environments, we don't support this type of two-hop or more impersonation, which is known as delegation. And so there are some companies, that get delegation working. There are some companies, that for whatever reason can't get delegation working. So one of the nice things about this trick is you stop running as Bob and you start running as SP underscore worker process, and that token was created on this machine. So now you can call over to the database without delegation being set up and successfully connect, using integrated Windows authentication. So that's the reason why some people like this. For the Windows security, change in identity, not so much for the SharePoint security change. Okay, well, let's say it's not about changing our Windows identity. Let's say it is about changing our identity in SharePoint. So we were running as Bob, and the second we run this, we start running as this other account, SharePoint slash system. Now, we have junior engineer Jimmy. He's a guy over in the United States, very eager, just got out of college, read everything about being a real programmer, and now he's trying to put it into action. So he runs this code, and then he says, okay, I'm running as God. This is great. spcontext.current.site gets a hold of a site, tries to do something, change the title of a site, and he gets access denied. And he says, how can God get access denied? I must really not understand this model very well. And so the key point here is it doesn't matter who you're running as, when you tried to do the work. It mattered who you were running as when the SP site object got created. So the answer to, Jimmy's problem is once you've, switched over and started running as SharePoint slash system, call new again on the SP site object, recreate another site collection on the exact same site collection, and now you have, totally unrestricted access. So obviously, this is great news for developers. You can do anything you want. This is horrible news for administrators. The developers can do anything they want. You know, so it is kind of arguably one of the, you know, Pandora's boxes of SharePoint, that if your code runs on the server, you know, and, you know, especially if they don't run code reviews on you, you know, you can basically be at a web part to site collection one that will break into site collection two and steal its data. Okay. So now we've kind of covered some of the background that I think is important before you even get to the point where you contemplate what's new in SharePoint 2010. So we have this new set of technologies, and what it's meant to really do, you know, is open up our options, you know, for how we store our users, you know, for who stores the password, who's in charge of, you know, taking care of the users when they, you know, forget what their passwords are. So we're going to start with this notion of identity. My friend Scott, he's in the back of the room. He has this problem where he's born the same year as me, but he can't go to a liquor store without getting carded. So if we take a step back, you know, don't even involve computer systems, this whole idea of identity, in as simple as something where over in the United States you can't buy booze or beer unless you're over 21. So Scott goes to the beer store. He wants to buy some particular beer. You know, so here's the requester. They're the resource provider. Well, what do they want? They want some proof that he's really over 21 years old. So the way we have things set up in the United States is we have this Department of Motor Vehicles. Scott had to go a couple months before, stand in line. You know, they ran all kinds of tests on him, cut him in half, counted the rings, and, you know, eventually they got to a point where they determined, okay, we know his date of birth. And so then they create this document, you know, the driver's license. And they kind of build it in such a way that no one can fake it. They give it back to Scott. So now Scott goes to the beer store and hands that to them. And these guys are able to look at this document and know that it came from the DMV. You know, so there's this notion of an issuing authority. Someone who's basically saying, hey, I know Scott. I know some facts about him. And if you believe me, you can look at these facts and you can start making judgments based on these facts. Now, in this case, you know, while the beer store to Scott is the resource provider, in security terms, we start calling it the relying party, because it's making a decision based on this one fact, that Scott's birth date, you know, is really, you know, June 4th, 1928. And so it makes its decision based on that. Now, when we bring that, you know, into the, you know, the computer world, it's really, you know, not very different. So what we have is we have this idea of a requester, and the requester wants some particular resources from the web server. But the web server wants to see some particular fact. Now, the web server is inside, let's say it's inside of an Active Directory domain. You know, so we have a trust that's set up. And what's going to happen is the client computer, you know, authenticates with the issuing authority, which is the primary domain controller. A security token gets created. A security token can then be seen on the web server. And the web server kind of looks at this and says, hey, I know who created this thing. It was the domain controller, and I'm going to believe what's inside there. So what are the facts that are inside a Windows security token? You know, the fact that, you know, you have a security ID or a SID behind your user account, and you have a bunch of Active Directory groups that you're in. You know, but it's, even though the facts are very limited into what kind of facts can be inside there, you know, it's still the same idea. Now, Windows authentication is without a doubt the most popular way that we authenticate in all versions of SharePoint. But let's, you know, look at some of the pros and cons of this particular model. So it works really well in LAN environments when you have nothing but employees who already have Active Directory accounts set up. And whether I have 50 employees or 2,000 or 20,000 employees, if everyone's already got an Active Directory account, my domain's all set up, you know, it works really well. Okay, now how about other scenarios? You know, how about extranet scenarios? An extranet scenario where we have 2,000 users inside of our company that already have Active Directory accounts. But now we have this, you know, group of 10 trading partners who has 5 users apiece, and so there's 50 external users that need to get to my system. So what do? We basically tell our NT folks, hey, you need to create these 50 accounts for these other users and go ahead, send them emails, you know, what their passwords are, and make sure they can contact you when they lose their passwords so they can go ahead and, you know, have you reset those. You know, so, you know, we say that begrudgingly it kind of works, but it's pretty painful to configure for extranet environments. And then how about the internet community setting where you want to put a link on your site? Click here to register as a member. Yeah, you can write the code, but you probably can't win the political argument that, oh, by the way, I've got a web part that's going to inject unknown internet users into your Active Directory structure. You know, for some reason, you know, the NT administration folks were always uptight and never let us do that. You know, so we can really say that, you know, Windows authentication is just downright unusable in so many different scenarios. So what do we get? In 2007, we got support in SharePoint for forms-based authentication, FBA. Okay. How many people here have FBA up and running? Just kind of curious. Okay. Pretty good amount of you. So we have FBA set up. And the nice thing about FBA is that my users don't have to live in Active Directory. My users can live anywhere that an ASP.NET authentication provider says they can live. And I can just, you know, use the path of least resistance and use the SQL membership provider that comes out of the box. And so now I can have the click here to register yourself, you know, as an internet user. And I just need to write the code to do that. You know, plus when it's time to reset passwords, the Active Directory guys don't have to do that anymore. You know, but what are some of the downsides to the FBA approach that we've seen? Well, one is, where do you get all the code to manage users, to reset passwords? And the answer is, well, you either write yourself or you go buy an off-the-shelf package. SharePoint sure isn't going to supply it to you. Okay, so that's one downside. You know, some other problems is the FBA token just passed back and forth. It's not really recognized by anything other than ASP.NET. You know, it's really kind of a point-to-point, you know, not an end-to-end protocol. So, you know, don't think of taking an ASP.NET authentication cookie, you know, and trying to pass it one hop, two hop, three hops down the road. You know, it's not built like that. There's one really painful part about FBA in 2007. Has anyone tried to use FBA from the Office client? Anyone? What's that like, in your honest opinion? It's a terrible experience. So I want to use this one site that supports FBA from the Office client. Microsoft says, hey, here's the page. So what you need to do is you need to take the browser, go to that particular site, get the cookie, make sure you persist it to disk, stand on one leg, rub your stomach, open the Office client, go ahead and connect to it. And, you know, it's a really silly thing. But then again, how is FBA all set up? In FBA, remember, this was designed by the ASP.NET team. Do they care a lot about Office client entries? No, they don't. They care about web applications. So there's an HTTP error, which is a redirect. And what happens when a client application gets an HTTP redirect error? It goes, huh, what? Okay. Now, there's some painful news up ahead. In fact, makes me want to tell a joke. You guys haven't laughed at my jokes so far this week, so I guess I'll take one of the ones that's not very funny. But there's this guy playing golf. And he's having a great day on the golf course. He's with one of his buddies. And his cell phone rings. He picks it up. It's Dr. Schmecklenburg. Hey, doctor, how you doing? Oh, Bob. Oh, boy, Bob. How do I start? I got some really bad news for you. I got some really, really bad news. And I got some even worse news. He goes, oh, well, that's too bad. Let's start with the really, really bad news. Bob, you have body cancer. What's body cancer? It's cancer in every part of your body. Oh, that's horrible. What's the survival rate? Well, you know, I got the results. When you catch it this late, generally, you know, you'll be lucky to live 48 hours. Well, if that's the really, really bad news, what's the worst news? I've been trying to call you for 2 days. Okay. There's a point to that joke. Okay, so what we have with FBA is that we have this bleeding that's going on with the Office client. The Office client just does not work. And so one of the things that we're going to say is, let's go back here, and let's go back into Central Admin. So here I am in Central Admin, and there's different web applications. Hey, here's our, now there's two kinds of web applications. There's the old classic web app. That's the one where if claims is for other people, that want to take risks and I want to have my safe place where things are just going to work, you're going to go with a classic web app. It just works the same way it did. But here's the rub. We go to my classic web app, and we go to authentication providers and default, and now I want to configure FPA, just like I did in 2007. I come here, Windows Forms is grayed out, and there's this text right here. Let me paraphrase this. I have some really, really bad news, and I have some even worse news. So the really, really bad news is we're not going to support FPA in classic web apps. We're going to kick you over to the other side, over to the claims-based area. And why is that? Is there going to be some short-term pain and screaming in customers? Absolutely. But the whole idea that we didn't want to go through a whole other product lifecycle with this continuing problem with the Office client, you know, was really the driving factor, you know, that led to that. You know, so some people are going to look at claims and say, not for me. For people who have FBA and want to bring FBA over to 2010, you know, you have no choice. You know, you've been pushed over the fence. Okay. Let's go back to the slides and talk about this new model, claims-based identities. So what's it all about? Well, we had this first step where in SharePoint 2007, we were hard-coded against Active Directory. That was the only game in town. And so when we moved to 2007, we got to move to ASP.NET authentication providers, and that was kind of a nice relief. You know, but really, it didn't solve that many, you know, it created as many problems as it solved. And so what we really need, you know, is some way to have, you know, any relying party, meaning any SharePoint farm, you know, be able to use any identity management system. And certainly that's the way the industry's been headed for a while. And so between Microsoft and a bunch of other, you know, big players, you know, in the specification space, you know, they got together and said, okay, well, we have this requester, we have this issuing authority, we have this relying party. How can we create specifications so the requester can go to the web server and say, hey, I need this resource. You know, what kind of a Windows or what kind of a security token do I need? And then once I get an answer back, well, I can call to some issuing authority. The issuing authority can, you know, authenticate me, and then it could create one of these security tokens. So there's just a whole bunch of specifications that went around, you know, building up claims. And so if you look at this picture down here, well, Active Directory is definitely going to work with claims. And so we have this idea of the STS, the security token service. So the idea is that we can go to the security token service of a requester and have it build a security token for us. And unlike this silly Windows security token, which only can live in a process, you can't even move it across processes, much less move it across machines. Now our security tokens are built by someone in an XML document, and they're signed, and I can take this like a driver's license, and I can walk around and hand it anywhere else. You don't care who gave it to you, you just care who signed it. And you can, you know, make some observations, you know, about that particular identity. Now, in terms of SharePoint, you know, another thing that's important to see is, you know, let's go ahead and if I go take a look at my machine right here, and we look at different sites, you know, there's this one web service, you know, that runs things for you. And that runs, let me go back to, sorry, I'm moving around so much here. If I go back to managed service applications, there is this one guy that's security token service application that's built in. If you kind of want to follow him, you know, inside, you can go to any SharePoint web app, and then, you know, basically inside of security token service application, you know, there's an entry point right here. You know, but the point I'm trying to make is that security token service is never a call across the network. What's going to happen is the request hits this particular web server inside the farm, and the STS is always running locally. But what it's going to do, if we're going to use Windows authentication, is that it's going to go through the exact same Kerberos or NTLM authentication process and create the Windows security token. Then it takes the Windows security token, basically ships it off to the security token service, and it builds a, you know, SAML version of that. Okay, now, let's go ahead and move over to whenever I create a new web application. When you create a new web application, that's the moment in time where you make this decision to, you know, make it claims-based or run it in classic mode. Can you change it after the fact? I mean, yeah, could you open up a can of peas and, you know, shove everyone up your nose? Yeah, you can, but, you know, it's like, do you really want to do that? And I think what you'll see is that when you create a classic web app, and I'm going to show you some more examples of the user information list, the user identity is not the same as the exact same Windows user in a claims-based web app. So if you go ahead and just, if you were able to just convert it over from one to the other, you know, basically all your access control list entries, you know, would be no good. You know, so that's one of the issues that we have. Now, let's go back over here, and let's go back to internet.wingtip.com, and now let's go to site settings. Let's go ahead and move over to site collection features and turn on that one feature that allowed me to show the user information list. So there's the user information list that we have inside here. And now that I see that, I lied to you. I'm going to go ahead and create a new web app because I'm on a different machine. I was kind of all thrown off. But let's go ahead and create a new web app right here so I can go ahead and demo this. So we're going to go into claims mode, and we'll just call this web app 1 and put it at port 999. And web app 1. Now, as we go down here, note that when you have a claims-based web app, you can have security that's NTLM. You can have basic authentication. You can also enable FBA. And also, there's this notion of configured trusts. So I could create a trust to another SharePoint farm. I could create a trust to Windows Live ID. So as we start creating different trusts, you know, all this is going to be configuration. You know, none of it is writing code. Then we'll be able to, you know, plug these other trust providers inside here. Now, if I have, you know, two or more authentication providers, when you get to my site and you're not authenticated, I have to take you to a page where you choose between Windows or Live ID. And so you can either point them to this page. In this case right here, I'm not going to change much about it. I'll go ahead and add this, you know, into an existing application pool. And other than that, that's going to be fine for this particular application. But one of the things I want you to see is when you look at the user information list, you know, things are going to be different. The user identity has this version of claims built into it. Now, we have two different web apps. One is a claims-based web app. The other is just a classic web app. And so the differences between them is that the first one is just going to work like it did in 2007. It's just going to basically build a Windows security token. The Windows security token, you know, sits in place, starts issuing calls across. But the second one, first time through, will create the Windows security token only to create the SAML token. And once we create the SAML token, we'll start moving the SAML token back and forth, you know, inside of, you know, the request and response along to the browser. You know, so another big change is, you know, when we have a classic mode web app, even though our web part doesn't run as SP underscore, you know, worker process, it doesn't run as, you know, Bob the Windows user either. And, you know, one of the things that's tripping people up is they use something like the business data connectivity services, and they don't realize that they have a claims web app, not a classic web app. And so when they try to, you know, reach out to SQL Server and say, hey, use a Windows identity, you don't have a Windows identity. You have to change back from your claims-based SAML token that has the exact same data into a Windows identity, a Windows security token, so you can make the call across the network. Okay. Okay, so now we have our site collection, and so we'll just call this one claims demo, and we'll go ahead and add administrator inside here. We'll go ahead and we'll choose OK. And then when I show the user information table, you know, I can prove that, you know, things are going to look a little differently inside there. And while this is, oh, there we go, it's all ready now. Okay, so let's come back here. Okay, now one of the first things I'm going to do inside this demo is I'm going to go add, you know, another person who can access the site. And you're going to see that now that we're in this claims-based web app, what we're going to see is that the people picker changes. And then when I finally get to the claims provider demo, you know, you're going to see that one of the neat things about creating a custom claim provider, you know, is that you're going to have, you know, the ability to go ahead and actually, you know, write inside there. Okay. Hopefully this guy is not going to take much longer. There we go. There's our site. Now let's go ahead and go to settings and go to site collection features and take this and turn that on. Okay, so here, the first thing I wanted you to see up here is, you know, the accounts are different. You have this idea of a SAML token. So here's what, you know, a SAML token looks like. You know, think of it as, well, you have this Windows security token. And it basically said, you know, you are Bob, and here's the security ID for your Active Directory account. Here's security ID for all the groups you're in. So you can see that when we have a SAML token, they basically just take all those facts and they write them into a bunch of, you know, name value pairs inside of an XML document. And in addition to what we have, you know, as far as the, you know, Windows security token information, we put extra information inside there. So if I show you a piece of paper and says, oh, here's something that says Bob is in this Active Directory group, you're going to say, fine. If that was a Windows security token, well, you'd know the primary domain controller did that, and so if you trust him, you'd be fine. When you see a SAML token, who created that thing? Well, now it turns out that every single farm has its own security token service, so the farm ID has to be inside there. If I give you a SAML token, and you're going to say, well, farm one tells me that Bob's in this Active Directory group. Well, you know, what happened is farm one trusts the domain controller. Domain controller built the Windows security token, said Bob is in farm one. So now farm one built this. And if I look at this, you know, how do I know that whoever built this in farm one didn't try to, you know, trick me into putting some, you know, extra, you know, claim in there that Bob was in something else? You know, so there's this path of trust that gets to be very important. But what we'll see is that, you know, every farm, you know, trusts itself, you know, and anything else you have to configure trust for. Okay, now let's go back here and go to site permissions. And inside of site permissions, what I'm going to do is grant permissions, and then we'll come back up here. And now we can basically see, you know, the new people picker. And the people picker has all these claims providers behind it. And what you're going to find is that now there's one that, you know, will look through and find things inside of Active Directory. Of course, because I'm not an Active Directory, I'm on a local machine, you know, it's having problems finding things inside here. But if I had FBA set up, I'd see an FBA choice inside here. There's one current complaint or kind of design limitation of the FBA support that's in SharePoint 2010, and that is, you know, if you have Robert and you search on Rob, it's not going to find it. You have to have the whole name inside there, you know, which is one of the things that they could have coded better, but, you know, that's the way it came out the other end. But, you know, as I show you how, you know, how to create custom claims providers, you know, I think you're going to see that you might have an opportunity, you know, to do something a little bit different. Let's see if I come back here, if I can find all authenticated users, and we'll go ahead and add that inside. And once we add, you know, that inside here, and we come back and we look at the user information list, you know, you can see that, you know, these things, you know, all get put inside. Now, if you look at this, you have this claim token. You know, this is basically a big XML document. And so when you look at this first part, and there's a whole bunch of characters, they take the entire SAML token and they, you know, basically encrypt it and compress it so they can put it in that form, so they can store the whole thing up there inside the site. And the idea is that then after the fact, they come back and they can decrypt it and read through the entire token, you know, without having to go back and, you know, re-authenticate or do something else. You know, but the issue here is that, you know, if you're wingtip/bob in a classic web app, you know, you're gobbledygook/pound something wingtip.bob in a claims web app. And that's kind of the rub that we have as you try to go back and forth between things. And so this is definitely going to cause some issues with migration, because everything we're migrating from is classic web apps. And as you take, you know, all these classic web app objects that already have ACLs and we try to move them into a claims-based app, you know, that's going to be the thing that, you know, gives a lot of people headaches inside. Okay, now let's go ahead and move to the last part where we're going to show a claim provider. So what I'm going to do is open up this particular project right here, and inside of this project I have a simple claim provider. So the idea of a claim provider is that you have this piece of code, and the piece of code kind of hooks in at a very low level. So there's this moment in time where they take the Windows Security Token or whatever they do with FBA, and they call the Security Token Service and they say, hey, we've got a user. We need to establish that user's identity and facts about that user and put them into the SAML token. And that's the point where things that are already built into SharePoint do things like take all the security IDs, put them in the SAML token, the farm ID. But now as a developer, you have an opportunity to say, hey, who is this user? Oh, let me call to some web service. Let me get some arbitrary fact about that user. Let me go ahead and put it in the SAML token. And that's what we call a claim. So what we want to do is we want to kind of step through the process of, you know, of building one of these claim providers and, you know, show how they work. Okay, now I have this claim provider right here. And so inside of my claim provider, I have this class, and what we're going to do is we're going to, let me walk through this code right here, entity types, add. Let me go ahead and take this and deploy it. And as that's going up there, let's talk about claim providers. You know, so a claim provider is a class that you create that inherits from SP claim provider. And there's a whole bunch of methods. And some aspects of it execute over inside the process for the security token service. Other aspects are going to execute in the process for your web application, like the parts that deal with the people picker dialog. And once you've created the class, you put it in a DLL, you install it at the, you know, you install in the global assembly cache, and then there has to be some way that we actually register this thing. And so one way that we can do that is by registering it manually. Another way is to use a simple approach, which is to create a feature receiver. But instead of creating something that inherits from the SP feature receiver class, we create one that inherits from SP claim provider feature receiver that already has the built-in code to do the registration and unregistration. So this feature has to be scoped to the farm level. So what we've done is we've created a feature. We've made sure that we have it inherit from the farm level. We go ahead and we add, you know, to make sure we inherit from this guy. And that way, you are inheriting the correct implementation of feature activating or feature activated and feature deactivating. And then all you have to do is provide it with some basic facts about, you know, what is the name and class and what is the display name. Okay, so now that we have this inside here, let's go ahead and do a deploy of this right here. Now, when you're working with this, Visual Studio, you know, quite often you point to a web application and it bounces the app pool. You got to be, you know, careful with one of these because you might be changing your code and hit and deploy and nothing's changing. Well, you also have to be, you know, occasionally bouncing the app pool of security token service, you know, especially the parts that, you know, creates things, you know, inside there. So the idea here is, you know, once we've created one of these things, let's go back and do a refresh right here. And what I want to do is I want to go up and get into the People Picker dialog once more. And all of a sudden, you'll see that, you know, you show up there, you know, as a claim provider. So now let's kind of walk through some of the methods that, you know, we have inside here. Well, inside of our claim provider, well, we have some things like its name, does it support entities, supports resolve, supports searches, a bunch of true or false values. But now we can kind of get into the meat of what we do. Fill claims for entity, fill claim types, fill claim value types. Well, the first thing that you have to do is you have to say, I support this claim and that claim. Now, what's great about this is what are your claims going to be? So we're coming from a world where we've been able to make two claims. My username is this, and I'm in a group called that. But now, dynamically, if I can go and look at your date of birth and say, are you over 21? Can I check a web service and determine whether you're a naturalized U.S. citizen or whether you're a managing partner for this company? So the idea of a claim is anything you want to be and as dynamic as you can write the code to make it, which gets to be really neat. So in this case right here, you know, we've created two different claims. So one which is role, one which is region, and then we go ahead and, you know, you create some big, long, unique string in this particular form if you want to kind of do what everyone else does. But now down here, we basically say, fill claim types. Hey, I do these two kind of roles. And they call some other method called fill claim value types. So we have to say, hey, that first one was a string and the second one was a string. Well, now the next one we have is fill claims for entity. You know, so this is the one where you do all the big work. This is the one where Bob's just hit the web server for the first time. And he was authenticated against Windows, and now they're going through the process of taking his Windows identity and changing it to a SAML identity. And so basically the Active Directory stuff is, you know, has already built in the different claims. And so what you have right here is you have, well, you're going to have the context, you know, basically, which is going to be a, you know, security object. At the end here, you also have this list of claims. So you can read all the claims that have already been created, but I can also say claim.add, claim.add. And so here, if I say, okay, there's the user Bob, let me go call a web service. Oh, okay, this guy is over 21 years old. He's a managing partner. So we can basically start putting these claims inside of his SAML token. You know, so that's the first thing that we're going to do. The second parts of this, you know, after filling, you know, really have to go with, you know, what happens inside here. You know, so what's going to happen when someone comes through here and, you know, does some particular query and is looking, you know, for something inside one of these particular claim providers. You know, so now here are some custom claims. And so when you create a custom claim provider, what you also do is you create to create code. So if someone just over on the left-hand side clicked on your particular node, you could return, you know, 10 different claims. If you don't have very many claims, you maybe just want to show them all to the user at once. You can also create a hierarchy over on this other side right here, meaning that if I click on this, my claim provider could give you 3 more levels of drill down. And then you click on one of those, and I can give you 3 more levels of drill down. You know, so you can create these hierarchies so users don't have to do searches. They can just click, click, click. There's the claim I want, and go ahead and assign it. You know, but we also, you know, put things inside here. So when someone comes up and, you know, it says sales, well, there's one of the claims that we're creating right there. You know, so as we create the claim provider, you know, we're definitely doing things like, you know, fill entity types. We're putting in things like fill resolve. So for instance, you know, what's going to happen when I type in sales manager and I go ahead and click OK? Notice that it's going to take that idea of sales manager. let's see, what have I done wrong here? Let's try it one more time. Sales manager and put it back inside there. Also note that what if I type, you know, sales representative and I click on this right here? You know, your claims provider is also able to look at that. And if they type partial words, do you want to find the match and go ahead and swap it out and put the right one inside there, or do you want to make them type? You know, so those are all kind of your choices as you're going down inside here. You know, but at the end of the day, you know, here's the main takeaway from the whole session, other than practice your demo and get your internet connection a little bit more secure before you start. Those are the two main takeaways from today's session. But let's go ahead and click on this right here. We add that inside, and now we come back and we go to the user information table, and you're going to see that a claim just goes in the user information table like anything else. And all of a sudden, it's something I can ACL. And so the fact that you create some type of claim and you make it possible so that users, just through the natural SharePoint UI, can find your claims and start configuring access control list entries, and then basically you're feeding the claims in the security tokens so that these users automatically have access to get there. You know, so the whole idea of a claims provider, you know, because it's so open-ended, is a fairly exciting concept. But now if we kind of end up, I know I'm right about out of time here, what are the things, you know, that we really see? Well, do you really need to go use claims? And certainly there is that, you know, group of people that would rather let the other side be the bleeding edge. And if you don't have FBA, you know, certainly there's nothing wrong, especially if you're migrating, we just leave it in classic mode. Things work just fine. If you want to move over to claims, it might be FBA. FBA has to work. You have to move over to claims. You know, you have no choice there. Another one might be we're interacting with some systems in the back, and you know, those are all configured to use claims-based security, and then we can set up configured trusts. You know, so that might be one reason. Another reason not to go to claims at this point is, you know, who in Microsoft has really gone to this claims-based infrastructure? The SharePoint team and the .NET WCF team? How about SQL Server? They're not there. You always have to go back to a Windows identity to talk to SQL. You know, so some of your work, you know, is really BDC and do pass-through authentication. You know, you might find that a claims-based web app is just a much more simple setup, you know, to use to be able to get there. But I think the idea of these custom claims providers, you know, gets to be pretty appealing. You know, especially when we get to a point where someone wants to configure your farm to support Windows Live ID authentication. We're not quite there yet, but I think 6 months from now, there'll be enough information on the internet where someone who's, you know, not an advanced SharePoint, you know, farm administrator is going to be able to go read a blog post and, you know, go to where we have farm trusts. So, you know, a matter of inside here, central admin, let's go to security, let's go ahead and manage trusts, and there's just the local farm. Let's go ahead and create this new trust here. And so, you know, creating a trust to live ID or single sign-on, you know, is really just a configuration process. And then all of a sudden, inside of your web apps, you can start recognizing users, and live ID was their sign-on. You know, I think the whole idea of SharePoint Online and hosted environments, they don't want to create users for you. But if we can all, you know, piggyback off Live ID users to these other things, and then Live ID worries about, you know, managing the accounts and resetting the passwords, you know, that's a pretty good dynamic. You know, but then if I get Live ID configured, well, that's great, but how am I going to do searches? You can't do searches through Live ID. You know, so Live ID, once you configure the trust, you probably want to go to the next step and create a custom claims provider, if for nothing else, just to help the search and manageability. You know, you can have something where when a user authenticates with Live ID, they can get to this one page where they can request more access, and then you give them more access. But as they get to that one page, they're going to be put in the user information list. You know, so maybe you can create a custom claim provider that when they do a search, you search through the user information list, you know, and find all the Live ID users, and you start returning them. You know, so ideas like this, you know, really kind of take the idea of trust and putting a lot more usability, you know, in front of it. Okay, I'm a couple minutes over, so I think I need to stop and move over to another room. But I appreciate you bearing with me during the first part of the session where things weren't going as quickly as they could. So thanks, everyone, very much for attending.